You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores. Ooh la la. Audio up. This is my miracle.
This is Michael Cohen, and you're listening to the Mea Culpa Podcast. Yesterday's GOP victory in Virginia and a too-close call race in New Jersey offer a potential preview of the horror show awaiting Democrats in next year's midterm elections should they fail to heed what amounts to a very urgent wake-up call.
Glenn Youngkin has been elected governor of Virginia, defeating Democrat Terry McAuliffe. Youngkin pulling off a critical victory for his party in the highest stakes election of the night. This is the first time Republicans have won an election for Virginia's top office in 12 years.
I will tell you, somebody in high up in McAuliffe's camp that was there with McAuliffe put it this way to me about an hour ago. It's a bloodbath.
For the past 5 years, Democrats rode record-breaking turnouts to victory, fueled by voters with a passion for ousting a president they viewed as incompetent, divisive, and fucking dangerous. Today's results show the limitations of such resistance politics when the object of resistance is out of power. The failure of Democrats to fulfill many of their biggest campaign promises, and the still simmering rage over a pandemic that transformed schools into some of the country's most divisive political battlegrounds.
What had been planned as a typical school board meeting in Virginia's wealthy Loudoun County this week devolved into pandemonium.
Shame on you!
With hundreds of parents flooding an auditorium to accuse the school system of teaching their kids that racism in America is structural and systemic.
Perhaps most strikingly, the crushing setbacks for Democrats in heavily suburban Virginia and New Jersey hinted at a conservative stoked backlash to the changing mores around race and identity championed by the party, as Republicans relentlessly and cynically sought to turn schools into the next front in the country's culture wars.
Caught on camera at school board meetings.
No more math.
This is illegal.
This is a Hydra virus.
Threats, intimidation, even violence over mask wearing, lessons on race, and more.
The level has gotten to an extreme.
Whether you like it or not, the next year will be dominated by discussions of critical race theory and whether or not schools should be teaching students this information. Beyond that is the politicization of mask mandates will force the rest of us to listen to fucking insane parents shouting this bogus bullshit, egged on by GOP operatives who have largely orchestrated all of this and then rode it to victory in a number of state houses. With their focus on parental rights, a catch-all rallying cry capturing conservative outrage over mask mandates, vaccination requirements, transgender rights, and how the history of racism is taught, Republicans found an issue that energized their voters, uniting the white grievance politics of the Trump base with broader anger over schooling during the pandemic. It was a cynical ploy to attract suburban voters, and it worked really well. Democrats were caught flat-footed without a message of their own to counter. They better get one soon, because what happened in Virginia is a fucking prelude to what's coming.
The stakes are high. When this election is over in Virginia, we will know. Have we seen the emergence of the Delta variant of Trumpism? The Delta variant of Trumpism. In other words, Youngkin, same disease, but spreads a lot faster and can get a lot more places. The suburbs, if they fall to him,
That Youngkin is more dangerous than the former president.
No, more easy to spread.
Okay.
Because more easy to spread. Because if you look at what he's doing, he is playing footsie with the worst of Trumpism. He's putting himself forward as a champion of parents. This is a referendum on parents' rights. But he's not talking about, but he's using all the critical race theory, head fakes and head nods, which is a softer version of a very virulent kind of anti-black posture. And so I think this is a very big deal, because if this is a pathway, if you can flirt with Trumpism, if you can flirt with Trump and still win in the suburbs, that's a new development for us.
For Democrats, the results on the nation's single biggest day of voting until the midterms next year raised alarms that the wave of anti-Trump energy that carried them into power has curdled into apathy in a base that is tired of protesting and is largely back at brunch. Or, in what would be even more politically perilous, that the party's motivation has been replaced by a sense of dissatisfaction with the state of a country that has, despite all of Mr. Biden's campaign promises, not yet returned to a pre-COVID sense of normalcy.
You know, I think we cannot run on just tying Trump to Republicans. I think that people want to forget about Trump because he was so chaotic and so destructive. And so I think what we have to do is we have to run on local issues. We have to acknowledge people's pain, and we have to show that we've delivered. And I believe that that will bring people back. It will also raise enthusiasm within our base. And I think we will turn things around.
Predictably, Donald Trump cast the evening as a victory for his MAGA base. On Tuesday night, 2 hours after polls closed in Virginia, Trump took credit for the GOP's anticipated victory. It is looking like Terry McAuliffe's campaign against a certain person named Trump has very much helped Glenn Youngkin, Trump gloated. Thank you to the MAGA voters for turning out big. Half an hour later, GOP Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel lauded the former president as the hero of the night. President Trump continues to be a huge boost for Republicans across the country, she declared.
I mean, MAGA turned out. And then we got them so much that we had even, you know, numbers comparable to mine. And they said, oh, he's more popular. Instead of giving us credit, they start saying, oh, he's more popular than Trump. You know, it's unbelievable. I don't believe that we lost it. I don't believe we lost Virginia. They cheat on elections more than anybody, maybe in the world. Okay, you want to know the truth. We're like a third world country when it comes to elections. So without MAGA, he would have lost by 15 points.
Yep.
More.
This is a logical spin to put on the Virginia result if you're trying to pump up your party and manage a narcissist's ego. But if McDaniel and others feature Trump in next year's elections based on the conclusion that he was an asset in Virginia, they'll be very fucking sorry. Polls show that he is a significant liability. Youngkin won this race not because of Trump, but because despite him.
Last night was a very bad night for Donald Trump. Because there's a guy who kept him in a lockbox. He has favorabilities plus 13 over Trump. And every Republican in that state is going, okay, we got to keep Trump and Mar-a-Lago behind the gates. Because when he stays the hell away, we win big and we can get our old coalition back.
Oh, Donald, it's happening again. You made Glenn Youngkin.
President Trump endorsed me the next day.
Without you, he was nothing.
You gave him power.
And I thanked him for it.
That's why Glenn Youngkin has banned you from coming to Virginia.
He used you.
He thinks you're a loser and he'll make him one too.
You are not welcome.
He's embarrassed of you. He wants you to stay away.
Not invited.
Far away.
Loser.
Glenn Youngkin, just another rhino stabbing you in the back.
Ashamed of you.
Basically, the GOP has a big night because they ran candidates who did not hew closely to the MAGA agenda. Call it Trumpism with a smile. Voters will turn out for these folks if they just turn down the crazy. Sure, They wallowed in the dirty mud of identity politics, but they also refused to co-sign any hokum about stolen elections and other Trump insanity. It gave swing voters permission to vote Republican without feeling like they were supporting a fucking lunatic. It also sent a message to Biden that he needs to listen to the moderate voices in his party and pass a fucking goddamn infrastructure bill.
What I do know is, I do know that people want us to get things done. They want us to get things done. And that's why I'm continuing to push very hard for the Democratic Party to move along and pass my infrastructure bill and my Build Back Better bill. I think if we look, think about what we're talking about here. People are upset and uncertain about a lot of things, from COVID to school to jobs to a whole range of things, and the cost of a gallon of gasoline. And so if I'm able to sign into law my Build Back Better initiative, I'm in a position where you're going to see a lot of those things ameliorated quickly and swiftly.
There's one simple trick to averting a Democratic bloodbath next year. Do what voters say they want. A Vox Data for Progress poll conducted last month found 71% of voters support raising taxes on the wealthiest Americans, and 60% support Biden's signature spending plan at the full $3.5 trillion. These aren't mere suggestion numbers. They are supermajorities. Democrats ignore those clearly stated wishes at their own electoral peril. Passing a robust domestic spending program and moving quickly to advance a voting rights package is the fucking minimum Democrats can do to show they are acting on Biden's lofty campaign promises. Those are also two key areas where conservative Democrats, not progressives, are opposed to the consensus within both their own party and their own country.
The Democrats in Washington have seemed extremely chaotic, even dysfunctional, in recent months. And the truth is, they control the White House and the Congress, and you can't fail to deliver on your promises and then expect to win elections. And that's a big message for Democrats.
And that's all I really want to say about last night, as the coming days and weeks will provide enough reading of the tea leaves to make me want to guzzle cyanide. What does it mean? What does it mean? I tell you, Biden's numbers are in the fucking toilet. People are tired of fucking COVID and they want someone to blame.
That these Republicans are dangerous. That this isn't a party that's just another political party that disagrees with us on tax policy. That at this point, they're dangerous. They're dangerous to our national security, because stoking that kind of soft white nationalism eventually leads to the hardcore stuff. It leads to the January 6th stuff, because if people are tolerant of it in your party, they're tolerant of the soft racism, it's a really short trip to get to the January 6th insurrectionist.
The Democrats need to get a better message beyond, if you don't vote for us, you're going to get a bunch of fucking lunatics. That said, the message is good enough for me when I look at Marjorie Taylor Greene or Matt fucking Gaetz. And yes, the prospect of Kevin McCarthy as House Speaker should chill you all to the fucking bone. Frankly, when push comes to shove and 2022 is upon us, the Democratic base will turn out in force to beat back the MAGA menace. If not, we're all in deep shit. The continued progress of the January 6th committee has grown. These fuckers need to be nailed to the wall for what they've done, and Democrats need to get busy getting it done.
Really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
A t-shirt and jeans, mac and cheese. Some things in life are an obvious match, like RIAs and Schwab Advisor Services, the number one choice for independent advisors. The difference is so obvious, it's Schwabvious. Learn why at schwabvious.com.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago, yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
And now for the main event. As Democrats and never-Trumpers wake up to the disappointment of yesterday's election results, the work goes on to find the truth behind January 6th and hold those people responsible for the violence and the attempted overthrow of our democracy accountable for all of their actions. My next guest on Mea Culpa, Alex Howard, is one of the loudest voices for that accountability through his perch as director of the Digital Democracy Project. His pleas for Trump's White House records to be released, as well as the former guy's prosecution, has become all the more important after yesterday's election result, suggesting that Trumpism is once again on the march. Howard has been honored twice by the Washingtonian magazine as one of Washington's tech titans, which recognized him as a respected trend spotter and chronicler of government use of new media. Over the years, Howard has appeared on air as an analyst for NPR, MSNBC, CNN, and has been quoted in hundreds of print publications. Howard has held fellowships at the Toe Center for Digital Journalism at Columbia Journalism School and at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. Howard joins us today on Mea Culpa to discuss a wide range of issues, including how Trump's incitement of the insurrection on January 6th is a direct violation of the 14th Amendment, which should bar him from running for president, never mind throw his fucking ass behind bars. So let's listen now to that conversation.
Okay, so Alexander, we have a lot to talk about, and we're just going to jump straight into it, if that's okay with you.
That sounds great.
All right, so Alex, you've written a lot, or at least have written a lot on Twitter, about the parallels between the big lie and the 1919 Germany in its own pre-fascist state by quoting the historian Timothy D. Snyder. Can you unpack these thoughts for my listeners and explain how this could all play out in the 2024 election, especially as it relates to this quote that I found apt in light of what's currently happening with the January 6th committee? And I quote, "To keep it going for 4 years, courts terrorism and assassination." What's the nightmare scenario that you fear most?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me to speak with you about these issues, and thank you for bringing attention to them. I think that it's a bit later than we think as a country. I think that we're in a dangerous place. I think a post-truth state, right, where you have tens of millions of people who believe something that's not true. There's a consensual mass delusion afoot, which is based upon a very old lie about widespread voter fraud. But that is now metastasized into something that the former president told people and has continued to repeat as he does again and again and again, very effective propaganda, until that falsehood becomes true, or at least there's enough doubt about it that causes people to question that their vote has been counted, right? So you had a bunch of people who showed up in Washington earlier this year who believed that the election was stolen for them, who believed that they were being disenfranchised by fraudulent ballots, that they were malevolent forces who had taken something away from them, and they were there to fight for something that was true. Of course, that was a lie. And the parallel you've brought up, I think, is historically significant. It's why I've spent a lot of time and attention trying to draw this out from history, just like we talk about his lessons from 1918 and the pandemic then. And of course, you probably know, right? People were upset about vaccinations then, about masks then, about public health authorities instituting restrictions on gatherings and churches and businesses. It's everything old is new again. Well, okay, let's see that pattern play out with respect to a society where you have people separated into extreme camps of partisanship who do not trust each other, who believe that something isn't true. In this case, in Germany, it was that they hadn't lost World War I. It was a national embarrassment. People did not want to grapple with the fact that they, Imperial Germany, had lost this incredibly painful, violent conflict. Millions and millions of people died. And as a result, people who didn't come along with this idea, this lie, more increasingly, targeted as the other, as people who are not proud patriots, right, who are not part of the nation. And that laid the conditions, pre-fascist conditions, for the rise of an actual fascist state in 1930s Germany. And of course, if you look around the world, we've seen fascist states from Japan, right? Something we dealt with in World War II as well, to Spain, to Italy. Of course, Mussolini and fascism comes from as an idea, as a concept, as a word, and now into proto-fascist states elsewhere, like Mr. Bolsonaro. And the risk is that we will end up hating each other and literally back in what unfortunately you see in many parts of the darker parts of the internet, real civil war, because people based upon a lie will come not to trust anything in anyone but a great leader who can bring success and prosperity to a troubled people, right? It creates the conditions for a slide further into authoritarianism and further away from what I think the United States still has a pretty good hold on, which is being a pluralistic, multiracial, liberal democracy, the longest existing one. And that idea is under threat, just as it was back in the 19th century.
Now, I watched something the other day, and I'm particularly sensitive to it because my father is a Holocaust survivor. I watched as Ted Cruz, and I know that if I was in your class, I think you teach at Yale, if I'm not mistaken.
I do not.
I apologize. That's Timothy Snyder that teaches at Yale. Then I'm going to ask him to forgive me, but I have to say what I have to say, simply because it's mea culpa and that's what we do here. I find Ted Cruz to be a dumb motherfucker. With all of his brains, with all of his bullshit, he's really a stupid motherfucker, and I'm insulted when I sat and I watched Ted Cruz asking Merrick Garland if Nazi salutes are a form of protected free speech. And at first I couldn't figure out, what is this ass clown fucking thinking? What is he doing? What is he trying to relate to the American people via this hearing that was going on? And I started just to read all the various different articles, and Newsweek actually had a pretty good article about it, as of course did virtually everybody, considering they couldn't believe this ass clown from Texas decided to be this crazy and this stupid. But this whole issue, Cruz's questioning, right, which took place the past Wednesday at the Senate Judiciary hearing, really emanated from a recent memo that was sent from the Department of Justice to the FBI simply about discussing strategies for addressing the rise in criminal conduct that's directed towards school personnel. Now, I'm trying to, for the life of me, figure out how addressing criminal behavior and conduct towards members of school boards and school personnel has anything to do with a Nazi salute. It reminds me so much of when Trump refused to denounce David Duke, when you saw in Charlottesville these white supremacists walking down the street screaming, "Jews will not replace us." I can't understand what he was thinking. I can't understand why, for the life of me, Jared, whose grandmother, was a Holocaust survivor from Auschwitz as well. And I think even the grandfather, because I remember when I was in USC, not Prague, at USC, we went to the Shoah Foundation and I saw their name there. I'm just trying to figure out, what is this moron talking about? What is the correlation, if any?
I think you're asking me why Ted Cruz is pursuing this line of questioning. And I think it's important to recognize that Ted Cruz is an Ivy League trained lawyer who's argued cases before the Supreme Court. He's a smart guy. He's also a politician. He's also not beloved in our country because he takes positions that have managed to keep him getting elected by Texans. Why is it that Texas is sending Mr. Cruz back to Washington again and again if he's not moving legislation, if he's not doing oversight that is actually holding the federal government to account? What is it that the senator is bringing to Texans that they value? Is it support, as in they lose energy? Is he providing constituent services to people in winter who don't have enough? Obviously, Mr. Cruz decided to travel during that time period instead of helping Texans in the blackout and said that there's nothing he can do, which is, of course, false. The role of elected representatives is to give people that. So what is Mr. Cruz doing? He's playing to the cameras and his base and to far-right cable on news networks and social media to create incendiary media that will be able to be relevant for him getting continued attention and prominence in the party, for bringing up the idea that people who are engaged in expression, in this case, allegiance to Nazism, right? Far-right authoritarianism with the explicit idea that the white race should be on top. An idea, by the way, that a couple hundred years ago was pretty popular in the American South and continues to be today with actual white supremacists, including those who live in Texas. He is signaling to them that he's there to protect their right to be racist in public, right? To express things that are anathema to liberal democracy, which, of course, is the idea that white supremacists should be in charge. That's what the Confederacy was trying to do to preserve slavery. Now, Mr. Cruz knows all of this, and he doesn't want to get any closer to this than he can. So he does not want to be accused of being anti-Semitic. So, of course, you see him turn to Twitter, right, when Representative Swalwell called him out about this for defending Nazi freedom of expression and said, "Your lie is 180 degrees in return. I was defending the right of citizens to denounce authoritarian policies," in other words, to oppose Nazis or petty tyrants, not to support them. Now, we know Mr. Cruz doesn't actually believe that, because if he wanted to defend people expressing themselves and protesting and denouncing government, he would have said, "Oh, Colin Kaepernick is peacefully protesting the extrajudicial murder of Black men by police. I support that. And I also support the Black Lives Matter protesters, right, who are coming out to say the murder of a man, George Floyd, was unconstitutional. That's unconstitutional policing. You've got a whole lot of people who see and experience racism in their daily lives, right, the legacy of slavery in our United States. And he's saying that you're allowed to be racist in public because that's protected speech, Now, he's not wrong, right? I think it is true that someone flying the swastika or wearing a swastika has the right to do that. They have the right to do a Nazi salute. We accept that the Ku Klux Klan, right, can get dressed up and walk around. That is constitutional freedom of expression. Where the things change, of course, is when you engage, as you know, because you're the lawyer in the conversation, in threats, right? You actually threaten someone, and that is not constitutionally protected speech. And that, of course, blows up the entire line that was supposed to stand in for actual oversight of the Justice Department, which Republicans should be doing, right? We need a strong opposition to question them on how well they're upholding civil liberties and how transparent they're being and how ethical they're being, on whether the previous president subverted the Justice Department to try to turn over the election, which constitutional conservatives should not be okay with. Mr. Cruz is using his moment in the national sunlight, right, to advance himself being seen to stand up to the Justice Department for the free speech rights of people expressing abhorrent ideas.
Agreed. But somewhere along the line, he's so devoid of reality. First and foremost, to unpack.
Do you think he really is, or do you think he's putting on a show?
I think he's putting on a show. And I think the show is not just for himself. It's also a show to a party of one, meaning Trump and Trump's supporters, right?
Well, because Cruz first wants to be president and Trump can't be, right?
That's correct. Now, of course, that's never going to happen either. But here's the thing. Texans are not racists. I don't think it would be a fair assessment to say that everybody that lives in Texas is an anti-Semite or is against a white supremacist. It would be a terrible thing
to
say.
That's not true. Any state or union or any place.
Of course not. I have relatives that live in Dallas, and I can tell you emphatically that they're not racist, nor are they anti-Semitic, because they're actually, you know, Jews themselves. So, but here's the thing that sort of bothered me a lot. A lot of this stupidity by Ted Cruz emanated from the whole issue of the mask mandate and the teaching of critical race theory in the schools, including rules that would protect
trans, by the way, right?
That's right. That's correct. Which, as well as rules that protect transgender students. Well, first of all, I think the rules should protect all students, regardless of whether straight, gay, transgender. What's the difference? Equal justice under law is an idea, right? Correct. That students should be able to go to school and feel safe to doing that. But then he went further, because this is where I say that I think he lost his way and couldn't figure out, like Donald does, how to back out of it. Right. It's like kind of trying to move, you know, an 18 wheeler in a single lane highway. Right.
Your podcast is mea culpa, but the lesson is not to apologize in our politics right now. Right.
Definitely if you're not a GOPer. But Hughes's Garland, he goes so far then to accuse Garland of exaggerating the threats against the educators. So these people don't have the right to say what is upsetting or concerning to them, that they need security to get home because people are showing up to their house, making phone calls, threatening their family, their children, and so on. But Ted Cruz knows better. It's truly amazing that he has some sort of divine intervention where he can turn around and look people straight in the face and say, no, 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 you're over-exaggerating the extent of the threats. Now, many of these hearings and board meetings are captured on video, so you get to see it yourself. I've seen some of them, and my personal opinion, they're not over-exaggerating, and they have the right, like they say in law, it's called the eggshell theory, right? You take each individual as they are. So if one person is a little bit more, you know, predisposed to nervousness or intimidation for whatever the reason might be, he or she is not entitled to feel that way, but Ted Cruz knows better, right? Which is crazy. And then just in one more response, just because you have the right to do something doesn't mean that you should. Yes, you have the right to walk down the street with a swastika flag. That doesn't mean that you should do it. Just because you have the right to turn around and to say something to somebody, like a school board member, about your feelings on critical race theory doesn't mean that you should, right? I mean, you don't control the school board. You don't control the curriculum. And I'm not really sure that, you know, the Third Reich was really a part of history that we want to emanate, you know, here in the United States.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago, yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores. Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores. You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago, yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
No, of course not. The real risk right now is that we slide into something that's more like Hungary, right? A flawed democracy where one party controls all the levers of power from the judiciary to state legislatures on up through Congress, and where it is impossible because of gerrymandering and suppressive laws for the minorities in the country to have power, and where you see religion be enforced upon everybody, in this case, an extreme version of Catholicism, right? That is not what a country of, by, and for the people of many races, religions, creeds believes in, right? The risk right now is that the structural incentives for the Republican Party are not towards opening up the vote to everybody. It's to retaining power because of this Constitution, right, which has given rural states disproportionate power in the Senate, and then literally putting through laws and putting through redistricting maps that cement power. Partisan redistricting is not just an issue with Republicans, of course, but it is something that we are seeing with racial gerrymanders now across the South that puts a high premium upon enacting voting rights legislation that empowers the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department to do what it was empowered to do by Congress under the 15th Amendment, back when we passed amendments to the Constitution, which is to uphold the voting rights of Black Americans across the South in the face of states that would oppress them. And it's not a simple idea. There's a great deal of lies about it, but the reality on the ground is clear to anybody. And the risk to American democracy is, I think, significant right now. You've got tens of millions of people who've been disinformed, who are quite angry, who believe something that's false, and that's being used to justify repression. I think right now we're about to see some break in the logjam in Congress in terms of reconciliation and the movement on infrastructure. But it's an open question on whether it's going to be possible to change the filibuster rule to get democracy and voting reform through, which is critical. Otherwise, we should expect this to be an inflection point in American democracy. We might look back a century from now, right, and when we're all dead, and be upset about, right, that we didn't do enough right now, as we saw the danger loom, to change the incentives, to add more states, to create ranked choice voting, to do what we can to reduce polarization, to fund a PBS for the internet, to create national service opportunities, to make sure that we take the money that Congress is giving out there to rebuild our communities, that we get around a national creed where it's out of many one again, right? That's not predicated upon what God we believe in or what skin or color is. I think a lot of Americans believe in that as an idea, as a concept. We just have to work together to get to it.
Yeah, agreed with that. But Alex, let me draw down for a minute on what we were just talking about, because CNN has a terrifying new report that for some reason has not received the attention that I believe it so justly deserves. Basically, what it's saying, election officials and secretaries of state around the country are receiving vile, absolutely vile and frightening threats to their life and to their families' lives from a number of these bad actors. Now, I'm curious if you saw this piece and how you believe that this will impact the midterm and the 2024 elections. And finally, if you believe if this is a concerted strategy by the right in order to flip the House.
Okay. So I think that they were reporting upon a hearing that was convened in the Senate Rules Committee by Senator Klobuchar that featured testimony from secretaries of state and election officials from around the country. And I think that that piece was picking up on what Senator Klobuchar was highlighting, which is the real risk that we're going to see people leave these positions at the state and local level because they are the subject of hatred, harassment, abuse, threats to themselves and their families. They will decide, perhaps reasonably, that those physical threats, people coming to their houses, people who could justifiably be thought to have deadly force, that is not worth the salary and the public trust involved with that role. And I think we're seeing is a huge amount of news, right, every day that is just rippling over our attention spans. And it's robbing us of our ability to focus upon where the actual signal is, where the actual danger is. And what you're highlighting is one of the great dangers we have, right? It's that you'll see the nonpartisan backbone of American civil society, our local election administrators, the state secretaries of state, removed from roles of the public trust and replaced with partisans, so that the next time there's an effort to subvert the election, maybe in 2024, maybe later on, you'll see people certify different slate of electors, or they do find more votes, or they do toss out ballots, right? They do take the actions that corrupt political elites are asking them to do with the not so implicit threat that if they don't do so, their physical safety will be jeopardized. And if that happens, right, we're no longer having free and fair elections. We're having a one-party controlled state where the threat of violence, where mob rule is what determines who wins or not. And the America that we've had since 1965, this fragile, embryonic democracy where finally minorities can vote, right? That idea will pass away and we'll end up into something else, a lot more like what Jefferson Davis and the Confederacy wanted, if we're going to be truthfully honest about it.
You know, the thing that, as I was reading that article, and it's a, in case anybody wants to go to it, it's a CNN article written on October 26th. One of the two individuals was Isaac DeVere. And it starts off with, "I am a hunter, and I think you should be hunted," a woman could be heard saying in a voicemail left for the Arizona Secretary of State, Katie Hobbs. Right? This is really a problem.
We justify, this isn't by like, the way.
Yes, this is not just a spam call telling you about, you know, hey, your auto insurance isn't up to date, or, you know, your car payment isn't up to date. And then there's another man who's saying, you know, "Die, you bitch, die, you bitch, die," repeatedly into the phone. Now, these are threats and these are actionable. And one thing that I would love to see is I would actually love to see the FBI get more involved. I'd like to see local law enforcement get involved. And I would like to see them hold these people, you know, accountable for these disgraceful and vile acts. You know, these people are doing their job. Just because you don't like the job that they're doing doesn't mean that this is the type of intimidation that you do. But let's not forget, who are they learning this from? From dear old Donald. They're learning it from people like Matt Gaetz. Let me just use myself as the example. When Donald Trump started to attack me on his Twitter, what do you think happened with all of these fucking lunatics finding out my cell phone number, my home number, my office number? It didn't stop on and on and on. Or then, you know, you have walking down the street and people want to start, you know, fighting with you and so on. This is absolutely crazy. And it's not just Donald. Then you had the same thing when you see Matt Gaetz do the same thing and talking about intimidation or obstruction of justice. And shame on Merrick Garland for already not having a special counsel appointed just to deal with Matt Gaetz alone. Just Matt Gaetz alone. If he's not the Donald, that's what everybody wants. We all want to see Donald in handcuffs. We want to see him in an orange jumpsuit. At least I do. So let's start with Matt Gaetz. Let's start with the Josh Hawleys. Let's start with the Marjorie Taylor Greens that's putting out videos showing her blowing shit up and saying, "That could be your house." Things like that.
Well, again, I think it's important for all of us to distinguish between constitutionally protected speech and genuine threats, and also to remind us all of what treason is and what subversion is. And what sedition is, because these words are relevant to our politics again, because there's a like widespread support for political violence, like what we saw on January 6th. And the same kind of anger, right, that we saw focused on legislators now can and will be focused upon other people, right, where the mob is called to attack. Anyone who's interested in the history of how republics fall should be looking back to Rome as well, if you're interested in sort of how this goes badly. You know, they had a war hero in the Republic who broke a bunch of norms. And he became so popular because he wanted to enact land reforms that would have given money back to the veterans that the other senators got together and hired a bunch of gladiators and they beat him and a bunch of his supporters to death. And that once that norm had been broken, first in the rhetorical sense, and then the use of power, and then the use of violence, it began the unwinding of the Republic until you had an actual military coup with Mr. Caesar and then eventually Augustus, right? This isn't something that people aren't afraid of in the past. Our founding fathers knew what demagogues were. Washington warned the nation in his farewell letter about the rise of such a person, and they gave us the tools to do something about it. And they gave us a constitution that we could improve. And they gave us a Congress that was supposed to be the most powerful body, the first branch that could do something about this. Now, you and your listeners should know, I mentioned the Klobuchar hearing. Well, Senator Klobuchar, it has a bill she put out there. It's called Protecting Election Administration from Interference Act, right? And part of what Congress should be doing is looking back, right? Looking at all the democratic norms that were not codified, where a corrupt president could do things like take emoluments, right? Because his party didn't object to it, Congress didn't object to it, Speaker Ryan didn't check him, he was able to monetize the presidency corruptly. And when he was cleared of trying to abuse his power in Ukraine, he went about using it further, right? They provide us the means to impeach and remove a president from office. We didn't use it. Right now,
until
our Congress should be preparing for the next threat, and that is election subversion.
Right. Right.
And we should be
and the Donald Trump 2.0. Because until, you know, you're 100% correct, until Donald J. Trump, right, our 45th president, decided to take a dump on our Constitution and show all of these Trumpists, the Ted Cruz's of the world, others who will try to be the Donald Trump 2.0, just how to accomplish this. But, you know, moving on, there's something that you posted, an interesting piece on Twitter, examining the role that supposed left or progressive media outlets writing about extremist groups like the Oath Keepers play in the actual spread of those groups. Now, they apparently use the articles as recruitment tools. Where do you stand on the need for strategic silence in denying these groups oxygen to spread versus reporting on their nefarious activities? Are we over-reporting or are we under-reporting?
I think we're doing the wrong kind of reporting, to be honest. And I think it's important to put this in context. So thank you for following what I was tweeting today so carefully, first of all. I'm glad I choose my words carefully. In this case, the reporting...
Yes, I'm sure, Alex, you know, because I choose my words very carefully, too.
Yeah, we both are good at that. So, Mother Jones was cited by 33 Oath Keepers as part of the reason for joining them. But you know what was higher up? Facebook, 1,000 of them. InfoWars, 900 of them. YouTube, 800 of them. Fox News, 500. Glenn Beck, 300. Bill O'Reilly, 300. Gun Shows, 180. Survival Preppers Podcast, 130. So all of those people who have become like radicalized enough to join a far-right paramilitary group, which is what the Oath Keepers are, the vast majority of them found it through far-right outlets, right, media outlets, or the internet. It was not through progressive publications. It was not because of this aggressive bit. I would say that if you look at Mother Jones' journalism, it is accurate, it is fair, it is honest, it is well-reported, and is well-contextualized. So the fact that some people said that they found this group through that doesn't mean it's the major vector, right? It's a tiny vector compared to the vast right-wing ecosystem and cable news, talk radio, Facebook pages, and most recently, right, the presidency itself with the United States government leveraged as a propaganda org. If we, I think, don't interrogate, sometimes you can end up with a false idea of what's actually happening here. And the major risk is that mainstream media publications, USA Today's of the world, the local papers, the local TV stations, et cetera, that they will repeat back lies without calling them out as lies and without leading the reporting with the facts as we know them. And inoculating people with facts against those viral lies, just as we inoculate people against viruses through vaccines. Right. You give a little piece of something to someone with a lot of context around them, and then you tell them, you know what? It is not true to say there is no voter fraud, but it is true to say there is so vanishingly small amount of it, despite repeated studies by the U.S. government and other institutions, that it is not something that we should institute laws on the basis of. Right. And that is something that goes right into the teeth of orthodoxy and a false belief that exists in these ecosystems. But the fact is that the viral lies, right, the tweets of the past president and everyone who aspires to that kind of success on social media, getting their message out, are pulled into media as the host organism. And so it's not to not report. It's not to say that there are Nazis marching on the green or coming to Charlottesville or that there are white nationalists planning violence in the Capitol. It's to say that they're planning to do so, and that there are this many of them, and they have these beliefs, and they're supporting these kinds of things, and these moneyed interests are backing them, and they're obstructing these different laws that would govern them, but we're going to respect their rights to freedom of expression and assembly and restrict them from scrapping with the people who show up to counter-protest them because they don't like white nationalists and neo-Nazis and supremacists who have some of the worst ideas in history, including those that have, say, led to the Holocaust, right? There's a critical way of thinking that is not filtered through to many of the profit-driven media organizations where they have a public responsibility not to platform people with these ideas, but to report on their existence and what they're doing and what their ideas are, and then to situate that in the historical context. It's not to ignore it, right? The idea is strategic silence and denying the oxygen of amplification to the bullshit. Because if you look back at people like David Duke, right? Someone who's in the Ku Klux Klan, their goal is to get their ideas into coverage. So people will see them and think, oh, well, that's okay. That's something I can do too. And if they're feeling disaffected, if they feel like they're being displaced by minorities, or that minorities are getting their benefits, that they're being left behind while someone else takes their money, these are the toxic ideas that exist in that ecosystem, right? Then they are susceptible to radicalization through all of the different places that exist for that online and off. And that is something that as a country, I think we have to grapple with it. It's possible to criticize media in good faith and also say that journalism is the backbone of democracy, right? That an informed populace is necessary to self-government. And the place we're in right now is we've got tens of millions of disinformed people. And when you have that dynamic, self-governance becomes nearly impossible. That's the risk we're in, right? We've got advanced truth decay in our society, and it's making collective action to do anything about the big problems much, much harder.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Yes, I agree, except the media is in part responsible, and it's not just the Mark Zuckerbergs and Facebook that allowed, permitted, and knew about this
so
misinformation campaign.
Facebook
is media, as are bloggers, as are the major media outlets, whether it's newspapers or television. One of the things that Donald has taught, and it's why Ted Cruz said the stupid things that he did, why the Marjorie Taylor Greens, Josh Hawleys, et cetera, say the stupid things, that because they learned from Donald, aka Captain Chaos, that the more chaos that you sow, the more bullshit that you throw out there, you create this chaos that doesn't permit journalists to do a scintilla of due diligence on the information that's being put out there. And everybody's they're so afraid that their bottom line is going to be affected. Holy shit, you know, Alexander Howard's going to get the story out before me, and I'm the New York Times. Who is he to get it out before me? I need to run. And so I can't do a scintilla of due diligence. I'm not making any phone calls. They'll go so far as to lie and say that the individual who is being affected by it was unavailable for comment, despite the fact that they won't even call, right? This is the problem. And this is what Donald Trump showed, that we have a very limited attention span. And it's why so many issues that were so big and they monopolized the television and the newspapers, we don't even know how they ended up. And you can't even think of what they are because there were so many, right? And that's one of the biggest problems, is the media is responsible for getting the information right. And while Mother Jones tries to get it right, I can honestly tell you that they get it wrong plenty of times, as does the New York Post on purpose, as does the Daily News, as does the LA Times, everybody, the AP, the Guardian, everybody gets it wrong.
But there's a difference
so
between
much
them, right?
Coming. But there's so much coming at them that they still help to promote the misinformation and disinformation. And the problem is those people who want to read that information in the manner in which it is being spouted, right? They will. And then it becomes fact to them, even though it's actually inaccurate.
We live in a truly difficult time where you have more voices lifted up than ever before, right? What happens when everyone's connected? Well, we all shout at each other, as it turns out. We turn into our own bubbles, right? We choose our own news. We choose our sources. We tune out those that we don't want to hear from. You know, this is the idea of the filter bubble, et cetera. But there is something new, right, where there's a participatory disinformation dynamic, something that you saw happen around the Capitol and we see elsewhere, and the use of automated propaganda, right, computational propaganda and networked abuse and dynamics that then drive offline action. And this is, I think, where actually Steve Bannon becomes quite important to talk about, because he's talked about the flooding attack, right? If you overwhelm the press with lies, with outrageous statements, right? With performative outrage, with constantly moving, it saps the ability of the papers of record, which do try to get it right. I think we can both agree that the journalists, by and large, that exist working today in the United States are not trying to get things wrong, right? They are trying to get an accurate count. They're trying to establish facts. They're trying to corroborate the who, what, where, when, how, and why. They are
Then they need to do their due diligence, and they need to get it right. This isn't, when you have the power of the pen, you need to get it right. End of period, drop the mic. You got to get it right.
And I think that the vast majority of working journalists try to do exactly that. What I'm describing is the condition, I think, that you're highlighting, that it is a strategy from, I think, folks like Mr. Trump or those who would emulate him to flood the zone with bullshit. And since we're swearing here, I'm glad I can say it. I feel like I'm an HBO. Yep.
I mean, McClatchy is one of the worst defenders of all of this. They know it's wrong, and they continue to promote it, again, for their own economic benefit.
But now, you're still upset about the Prague story, right?
It's not just the Prague story. It's a thousand other stories, too. For example, I never took money from Poroshenko in order to set up some meeting with the Ukrainian, you know, the Ukrainian president Poroshenko. I had nothing. The first time I ever heard about it was when I read it in the paper. And the more I turned around, I said, I had nothing to do with it. No, you're lying. And then they just continued to promote it and promote it. And there's, once you're that subject, there's nothing that you can do to get it back. Right. It's like, who was it that turned around and said, you know, what do I need to do to get my reputation back? Right. What
you do need good to works. Do. Dance. Yeah. Right. Just do good works.
Whatever works. Mea culpa. Thank you to my, you know, 1.4 million downloads per month, because I will get the reputation. Thank you very much.
I now, guess there's going to be a lot of people listening. How about, so better ask a good next question then. Set me up.
I sure will. Right. Today on Twitter, you actually wrote, a healthy conservative party would be a partner for good governance reforms needed to codify norms, a corrupt president exposed, democratic reforms to protect every vote, and industrial reforms to curb emissions driving climate change. Yeah. The world can see our union is sick and divided. Now, I'm curious what this was in reference to, and whether you think it's even possible to restore a loyal conservative opposition to any prominent role now that the GOP has become a cult of personality and an authoritarian party.
I think it was in reference to the fact that we're focused right now on whether the Democratic Party is able to unite its caucus around a big chunk of legislation on infrastructure and some combination of legislation that would be focused on childcare, climate change, clean energy, a host of other things. And we'll see, right? The idea that, however, it's their responsibility, I think is where there's a problem. The fact is that any country that's a democratic representative body needs to have people who go to government in good faith to get things done for their people. And take, for example, the question of childcare, right, and sick leave. The United States is alone in industrial countries in not having that. We have the least amount of social safety net for parents and children of anywhere. And fixing that would massively empower every single parent. And it would not matter what race, color, religion, or creed, right? It's something that would help everybody. Getting broadband internet to every county is something that would help everybody. Getting a national recharging network of stations and having subsidized electric cars and trucks would help everybody, right? It would, and it would also, by the way, get us to the goal that we need to get to, which is reducing our emissions so that our human activity stops warming the planet and gives us a position of global leadership so we can say to other countries, you know what? We did this with England and the rest of industrializing countries. We are disproportionately responsible, but we have disproportionate money and power. We will come help you with clean tech. We will be a clean tech leader. We'll provide green energy, wind, tidal, solar. You know, we will make a difference in terms of getting you off of coal, getting you off of natural gas, getting you off of fossil fuels, because we all agree as a global polity, as humanity, that this is a problem. A healthy conservative party would look more like the one in England, which buys into these things, right? Which has the, I think, reasonable idea that when there is a collective need around public health, around the natural defense, around safety, around creating resilience, because we've already got change built in, that we'll do it together. And the Conservative Party would hold the ruling party, whatever it happens to be, to account on the rule of law, on equal justice, right? On making sure the Constitution is what comes first. You cannot say that about today's modern Republican Party, right? I think you adequately described in a very pithy way what it looks like when a party goes far right and authoritarian and now anti-democratic. It has unpopular policies and it's obstructing what seems to be, I think, a reasonable set of actions that would benefit all Americans at a time when people have lost trust in government. Healthy democracies have political parties that check each other so that if one gets corrupt or sclerotic or oversteps, the other one gets elected in and it goes back and forth. And you don't have people choosing their own voters and trying to disempower racial minorities to take away their ability to ensure that equal justice under law exists as a lived reality for them in their communities, in terms of the policing systems, in terms of their ability to buy houses, which of course are correlated with opportunity around because of educational success. And the need to get our parties to compete for votes, not to try to repress them or choose them, is paramount right now. It is the thing that will make a difference in terms of the United States sinking or swimming in the 21st century. And there's a lot of common sense suggestions around that that are before Congress. I think that the pared down bill that Mr. Manchin put forward is a good way to do that. I think voting rights, though, are critical for preserving everything else. We need healthy parties that compete for votes, that do not try to advance lies. And most of all, if they cannot win at the auction box, don't try to subvert elections or outright overthrow the will of the people. And that's what we just saw happen. I called it out as a self-coup out was happening, and that's exactly what it was. And we saw a failed putsch for the first time in modern American history. And the people who were involved still have not been held accountable. That is something that should concern the rest of the world, and it certainly concerns anybody who's watching what's happening in the United States right now. The history of pre-fascist states is that the coups eventually succeed. And if a party is so successful in obstructing the other one from governing, from legislating, from moving anything, people then disaffected by the ability of democracy to deliver for them will turn to strongmen. That is what history tells us.
So then let me continue with this idea. And if you would, if you can unpack your thoughts on Fox News for my listeners in the role that you believe that they are playing in spreading stochastic terrorism when they give a platform to somebody like Tucker Carlson, who says that the January 6th insurrection was a false flag operation. Also, if you could explain this concept of stochastic terrorism as well, which is something that's placed upon Trump often for his own violent and insightful rhetoric.
Okay. So it refers to random acts or lone wolf events, like the guy who showed up in front of the Library of Congress with a bomb threat in that truck earlier this year, right? Or people who attack legislators, members of Congress, like Gabby Giffords, right? Or the man who showed up and shot Steve Scalise, right? Which is an example of someone on the far left. This is not just a far right phenomenon, but it is disproportionately focused there for many reasons, including the kind of toxic libertarianism that is endemic to many parts of the United States. The idea is basically this. If people feel like the world is coming apart and someone else successfully says that this other group is taking that away from you, that these group of media are your enemies. They're lying to you. They're making up sources. They're intentionally distorting things because there's billionaires working behind them, right? Anti-Semitic conspiracy theories that I'm sure you're familiar with. The idea of replacement theory, right? That they're bringing in foreigners who will replace you, something that Tucker Carlson has mainstreamed. These are ideas that do, in fact, inspire people to go beyond leaving death threats and showing up at someone's house, and then at the very far end of it, showing up with a gun. And of course, in our country, we have more guns per capita than anybody. And we are in a place where we have allowed the Second Amendment to be so far expressed where someone's absolute right to carry a gun in public, as long as they're not black, must be preserved before all other values. The whole idea of a well-regulated militia seems to have fallen by the wayside. Instead, we say that someone is allowed to carry a rifle that is designed to kill a lot of people quickly. Not like the deer I hunted in upstate New York, not like the birds I shot at or the pistol range, right? It's something that is designed to kill people in a conflict. And to say that ownership of that is intrinsic to your citizenship. And the combination of that elevation of that above all other values and the othering and fear-mongering that you see on Fox News is going to inspire more people to show up at newspapers, at election officials' offices, at school boards, or, unfortunately, because we're seeing this norm broken, at other elected officials' homes, whether they're governors or state senators or representatives, you name it. And most of them, of course, do not have the kind of protection that the White House does, right? Most of our history, we have been incredibly fortunate to be a democracy that does not have high levels of political violence. We've kind of seen other nations. You know, if you think back to 68, the assassinations of JFK, of MLK, RFK, right? Those are incredibly traumatic national events. But in our history, there have actually been quite a number of people assassinated. It's something that just doesn't happen as much in modern history. But we're entering an era when the risk of that is much higher. And Fox News is complicit in that, just as they are complicit in platforming anti-vaccination views that are, in fact, killing their viewers. I mean, there's no question about at all that Fox News has platformed people who are expressing these views, who are introducing doubt, and that is leading people to make decisions that are directly antagonistic to their own preservation, right? And certainly those of their communities. The idea that you won't wear a mask to make sure that old people don't get sick inside, that's a pretty small ask. And yet it's being represented as something that a totalitarian state puts out with a tremendous amount of disinformation about it not being effective for mitigating the movement of an airborne pathogen, as if we hadn't been seeing doctors and nurses do exactly that to protect their patients for decades. Fox News is pernicious, and I wish that it weren't. I wish that we had a center-right network that was more like the Wall Street Journal's news, right? Something that was rigorous about facts and wouldn't allow bullshit to be uttered by its pundits, and had, I think, a reasonable adherence to the idea that just because you have different politics from someone doesn't make them your enemy, right? That we're all united by something.
That's right, except...
I mean, honestly, I would like to see a lot less hate. Right. I was raised in the tradition of the Society of Friends. This is a group of people who believe in the power of peace and love, and we're abolitionists going way back before that was a thing in our country. I think that the more we get back to finding commonality around shared values, the better off we'll be. And that's not what Fox is after. And it's become, I think, significantly worse after Mr. Ailes wasn't there anymore. Their response to the demand signal of a party going far right has been that Fox is unwilling to show things which puncture the toxic disinformation bubbles that people are inside of to do their job. And you see that when Chris Wallace does that, viewers get extremely upset. The guy who made the call in Arizona, he's no longer at Fox because the Republican Party was so mad at him for reporting what was accurate, that their models showed that Biden won Arizona. And denying that fact and then removing the person who dared to put it in front of people that upset them so much is unfortunately part of what Fox does. And its executives seem to be okay with it. Mr. Murdoch seems to be okay with his network having such a pernicious effect on democracy. And I'm not sure what's going to change that, but I know that the outcome from it is apparent all around.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
So since you bring up Fox News, you compare what Fox News is doing to the showing of the now infamous hate movie At the Ellipse, which was played just after Rudy Giuliani spoke on January 6th. For students of that day looking to understand how that crowd was truly incited by a well-planned and well-thought propaganda effort, what was the content of this film, and who do you think was behind its creation? Now, for a second, I'll quote from Just Security, their description, and I'm quote, "To a scholar of fascist propaganda, well-versed in the history of the National Socialist pioneering use of videos in political propaganda, it was clear watching it what dangers it pretended. In it, we see themes and tactics that history warns pose a violent threat to liberal democracy. Given the aims of fascist propaganda to incite and mobilize, the events that followed were predictable." What's your take?
The scholar in question is a fellow named Jason Stanley. He's a philosophy professor at Yale University, so he actually does teach there. And he's written about fascism, and he analyzed the video that was shown at the Ellipse. Which is quite dark. I remember seeing it for the first time and struck by its difference. It's not something you can expect to see from a White House. It had much more to do with the themes that then President Trump talked about in front of Mount Rushmore. It had more to do with his American Carnage speech, with the weirdest, most, I think, dark inaugural we've ever had. To scholars of this, right, and I'm not a scholar of fascism. I'm trying to learn as much as I can from the people who have studied this because I believe in going to experts and reading their books.
Ask Donald. Why don't you just call Donald? He's an absolute expert, as he is in everything else on fascism.
Well, I understand, although he's vigorously denied it, that he had a copy of Adolf Hitler's speeches at his bedside. And of course, he can't be trusted when confronted by the reality of something. But it has struck me many times that his rhetoric, which is simple, powerful, and effective, could be informed by studying the rhetoric of somebody, because he's literate enough in his past history to be able to read articles, particularly those that mention himself, anything that might be useful to him in his ability to create his web of cons, right? Something that you're very familiar with. And the thing that's important about this and the thing that you link to at Just Security is that fascist propaganda has a mission. It's to create a sense of loss, something that has been taken from you. This election has been stolen from you. They took it away. And then to create a desire for revenge. You should go get them back for this. You should take it back. And of course, that's exactly what that crowd did. They marched down the street and tried to take it back, something they thought had been taken from them, the win. And the goal of fascist propaganda is to mobilize a population, to violently overthrow multi-party democracy and replace it with something else, the fascist state, right? This is not a new idea. And if you look back and analyze the propaganda that you saw the Axis powers putting out there, including the stuff they tried to infect American soldiers with. You see that seductive call towards nationalism, right? Towards the military power, towards powerful images of patriotism and the other, right? The invader, the foreigner, the in this case, in our country, right? The idea of Antifa, right? And today, right? There has been in this continuation, this bit of propaganda we're seeing now, because that's what it is, right? I was careful with this. I don't particularly want to call something that a putative news channel is putting out fascist propaganda. But if you look at the promo for Tucker Carlson's thing, it kind of reeks. And the reality is that we, I think, are dealing with is that these ideas are being platformed and we're seeing them being exposed to massive numbers of people who are in their own alternate realities and who are choosing media networks and soon social networks that repeat them back and back and forth to each other. And if that continues to happen, if they reject what's in front of their eyes and choose instead what Dear Leader says on social media, right-wing social media, that's amplified on talk radio and amplified on far-right networks, which are disincented to tell people something that punctures these bubbles, we're going to see offline violence like January 6th at state houses and marches and anyone who dares to speak up against what's happening. It's one of the reasons we need to be super careful in the precedents we set right now for the use of state power to repress people's civil liberties. And this is something the Obama administration is culpable for. They gave the next administration a whole bunch of tools and precedents that then they could abuse, from drones to surveillance to outrageous secrecy at the Justice Department with respect to secret laws that are governing these things. And instead of setting up the kinds of checks and bounds that would make sure that if a crazy demagogue somehow managed to be elected, they couldn't nuke the world, instead, we had the rather uncomfortable situation of the Joint Chiefs checking in with everybody after a failed putsch and self-coup saying, we'll all check in if he tries to wag the dog and nuke Iran or North Korea or whatever, right? One of the scariest times in recent history was after the election, because until I took a deep breath on Inauguration Day, I was extremely concerned the president was going to start a war to try to retain power or otherwise shift what had happened.
Or otherwise create the big lie and to try to make shit up. But Alex, let me thank you for joining us. As I said, the hour goes by really fast, but I do just want to leave you with this thought, because obviously I know Donald for a long time and I sat by his side for a long time. One of the biggest problems is that Donald Trump is emphatically a racist. All right. And I always say he's a racist, sexist, misogynist. But what he really is showing this whole group of people, what he really reeks of is the need for white privilege. And that's one of the biggest problems that he's stoking and that the misinformation, disinformation campaign is predicated on. And that's why you'd see, so much violence that's going on right now.
Yeah, it's an upsetting time to see our country in such pain and to see old bad ideas be resuscitated by people who should know better. And a lot of folks motivated by fear, right? By fear, I'm going along with it instead of repudiating these ideas and saying, you know what? We should be better than this. We should be standing with our fellow Americans. And that is going to mean, by the way, voting for them, right? Or not voting to put fascists in power or keep them there. Continuing to repeat things that are false because the party demands it of them. But the consequences are very high for people who stand up against Mr. Trump. They lose their office. He's trying to primary each one because loyalty to him, not the party, not the Constitution, is what's paramount to him. And you know his personality quite well. He is seeking revenge for everyone who did him psychological injury when he lost. And that's going to continue for a long time and up and until he's frankly banned from office or he dies.
Or indicted and incarcerated. Yeah, or indicted and incarcerated. But Alex, let me again thank you so much for your time, your insight. I truly, truly appreciate it and definitely want to have you come back on Mea Culpa.
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation. It was an engaging conversation. And I'm really grateful that you offered the time. And I guess I'll see you online.
You got it. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. And now for today's mea culpa. In thinking about yesterday's election result, I am reminded that voters have the attention span of a goldfish. As much as they care about the attempted overthrow of our government, they also care about ordinary kitchen sink issues like their taxes, schools, and infrastructure. That, perhaps, is the takeaway from Tuesday's vote. Trump and his party remain extraordinary threats to democracy, but the dynamics of our elections remain decidedly ordinary. Republican obstructionism may be hamstringing Biden's ability to deliver on his promise of post-Trump unity, but it's his poll numbers that are suffering. Republicans may have no ideas, but Democrats will face political consequences if they fail to execute theirs. And even with one party openly supporting insurrection, the midterms might still be the rebuke of the party in power they traditionally are, unless perhaps Democrats can finally deliver on their popular agenda. Quite simply, being anti-Trump is no longer enough. Biden was elected mainly because he was not Donald Trump. But he was also elected to get things done and to fix the mess made by Trump. Right now, that's not being done. Excuses are like assholes. Everybody's got one. Democrats need to knock off the haggling, pass some legislation, and put people back to work. Then again, this might just be the way things are. We could prosecute Trump for the insurrection and still lose the House because voters in New Jersey want to pay lower property taxes. That is the wonderful and frightening mess of democracy, whether we like it or not. And thanks for listening. Mea Culpa is brought to you by Audio Up, Midas Touch, and LSJ Media. And it's written and produced by Jimmy Jelinek. Executive producers are Jared Gustat, Jimmy Jelinek, myself, Michael Cohen, and Phil Alberstadt. Our editor is Lisa Orkin. It may be a new day politically, but nowadays the landscape is more confusing than ever. Donald Trump may have lost the battle for the presidency, but in many ways, Trumpism is winning the war on the state and local level. Mea Culpa is here to help guide you through the wilderness and keep you informed. And let's face it, we all want Trump, Rudy, and the rest of these seditious traitors to see justice. And folks, it's coming. So stay tuned as I guide you through the twists and turns of the criminal process that will ultimately see them behind bars. Mea culpa. Nothing but the truth. This is my-